Because this podcast is being released free of charge, I'll be asking each guest to choose an organization or fund they feel passionate about, and encourage anyone who is able to donate. Today's guest chose the International Anti-Fascist Defense Fund. In their words, the International Anti-Fascist Defense Fund provides emergency support to anti-fascists anywhere in the world, whenever they find themselves in a difficult situation as a result of their stand against hate. Whether it's replacing damaged or stolen property, paying medical bills, helping them find a safe place to stay, funding legal defense, helping their families, or doing Antifa prisoner support, this fund seeks to alleviate the harm that results from doing the right thing sometimes. You can donate or learn more about the fund by clicking the link in the episode description. Also, in this episode, me and Damien discuss the Canadian media character Ed the Sock, and while we briefly touch on the fact that this character has now become a right-wing mouthpiece, neither of us realized quite how horrible his speech has gotten. So while we talk nostalgically about the silly TV character we grew up with, we both want to make it clear that we do not support or endorse this character or the person behind it in any way. Everybody, and welcome to Enthusiastic, the podcast where me, Chloe Huberto, has a pal on to dive perhaps concerningly deep into something they feel super enthusiastic about. Today's guest is somebody that I've only interacted with in real life a handful of times, one time including at a casting call for extras for the show Fargo, where we were in a line of like 2,000 people. What are the chances? But I'm super excited to have them on to talk about something today because I feel like we have some mutual enthusiasms. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Oh, hello. My name's Damien. I'm a lazy podcaster, lazy zinester, elderly punk rocker living in Victoria, BC.
You're not that elderly.
In subcultures, 35 is pretty ancient.
Okay. What topic did you pick today?
Well, I decided that I want to talk about Comedy Bang Bang, the podcast universe.
Does that include the TV show?
I think we can touch on the TV show since I did come across it first. So that's sort of my introduction to the world.
Okay, well, that was going to be my next question. So yeah, what's your origin story for Comedy Bang Bang?
Well, if you want to take a deep dive. I was a huge let's do it. I was a huge fan of Mr. Show with Bob and David in my formative years, and after that went off the air, I was on Tumblr doing Tumblr stuff one day, and I came across a bunch of GIFs from the IFC channel's Tumblr account with I thought, oh, I recognize that gentleman. That's Scott Aukerman from Mr. Show with Bob and David. Interesting. He's got a TV show called Comedy Bang Bang, and it's weird. I got to check this out. And so I did, and I loved every second of it. And then later on, I discovered, oh, weird. This is actually a podcast first. Well, I should check that out, too. So my partner and I went to the Earwolf website, checked out Comedy Bang Bang. The very first episode we heard was featuring Reggie Watts, the band Tears for Fears, and Cake Boss, as played by Paul F. Tompkins.
Can I just interject and say that one time Reggie Watts laughed because I scanned a pizza funny?
Wait, what?
So, the health food store that we both used to work at,
yes,
but at different locations, Reggie Watts was in town because he was opening for Nick Cage.
Oh my God.
First time I saw him, because I knew who he was, but I didn't have like a deep knowledge, but I remember like being at the till and like seeing somebody and thinking like, oh, that kind of looks like Reggie Watts, and then being like, okay,
it's probably not. And then like a minute later, I think somebody was like, I think that's Reggie Watts. And then he came in a second day. I mean, maybe this is too much to go into, but he did get the vegan mac and cheese 2 days in a row. And I was
good for him.
I was on the cafe. Good for him. He didn't come through my till. He came through the till next to me, unfortunately.
Drag.
But they used to sell these big frozen pizzas, and they would always put like a scanning sticker right in the middle, which makes no sense because then, like, how are you supposed to scan
it? Right.
So I was just like, I guess that you could say I was doing a bit, trying to scan it. And I just like threw it on the till on an angle. And he was like, ah, so awesome.
I love him.
Yeah, he's a good egg.
Yeah.
If we can go back, how did you discover Mr. Show? Was it just on TV and you just
came across it on, what would that channel have been back in the 90s, early 2000s? Like, was it Showcase maybe or Bravo? One of the two, Channel 32 or 39 on cable, which was a thing back in the day.
One of the channels I never had growing up.
Yeah, one of the ones that always had mature content after 9 o'clock or whatever, including Mr. Show with Bob and David. So I discovered it then. It was sort of it made sense to get into because I was also still am huge Kids in the Hall fan, and it just seemed like a sort of a natural progression.
How old were you?
14, 15, somewhere thereabouts.
Huh. Yeah, I'm always curious, like. I guess also because I grew up with like up to channel 28 and nothing more.
Right.
was that the
country music channel?
Oh, I think it was. Yeah.
Sad. I remember the most insignificant bullshit.
No, I on the first episode with Molly Risa, we were talking about Much Music, and we were like, yeah. So Treehouse was channel 17. Much Music was channel 18.
Oh, damn.
Don't remember what 19 was. 20 was YTV.
19 was the Weather Channel.
Yes. Okay. That makes sense. Because as I was going over, I was like, 19 was sort of inconsequential in some way, but I don't know what specific way. 24 was TLC.
Yep, that's right.
Do you remember Spike TV? It was like a men's channel.
Oh, I was just talking about Spike TV with my friend yesterday, making fun of men. It was terrible.
Yeah.
So I was a huge Kids in the Hall fan, again, still am. And that just seemed like a very natural continuation bridge into the more adult world of Mr. Show with Bob and David. And then a couple of years later, some of my, I would say maybe older, more hipster friends had all of the Mr. Show DVDs. So I would go over, hang out with some of them, and we'd just watch the full episodes. And yeah, I was hooked.
Nice. And then fast forward years later.
Here I am.
Tumblr.
Yep, Tumblr. Which was a thing, and Comedy Bang Bang.
So this is a very broad question, but Comedy Bang Bang feels like a very big, very esoteric universe.
Oh yeah.
Did you feel when you were first getting into it? Did it have that vibe around it?
Well, it sort of did. It turns out that now that I recall, the episode that I first listened to had connections to other previous episodes that I didn't know at the time until I took a deeper dive. Cake Boss was listed as one of the guests. However, at that time in real life, the real Cake Boss had been arrested for drunk driving. And so they worked that into the show. So Paul Tompkins was supposed to play Cake Boss, but instead the Pie Minister, as played by Mr. Paul F. Tompkins again, was the surprise guest in lieu of Cake Boss. And it slowly came out over the course of the next hour and a half that the Pie Minister had framed poor old Cake Boss for drunk driving, because the Pie Minister, the ever present war between, well, cakes and pies, as explored in a Paul F. Tompkins bit, of course.
So here's my thing with this universe. Mm-hmm. I find it hard to, I think I've been meaning to watch the show, but I can't find it anywhere because it's not on Netflix right now. But when they're playing characters, I find it harder to get into, especially on like an audio medium.
Right.
because I really like those individuals. Like, I love Paul F. Tompkins as himself, mm-hmm. and like Scott Aukerman and Lauren Lapp, all of them. So is Cake Boss like? It's not. He's not actually playing the real person. It's like the taking the idea and the aura.
Well, the Cake Boss character has the same real name, Buddy Velastro, as the real TLC's Cake Boss. A much more exaggerated New Jersey accent, a definite, not remotely close to real life backstory. So I guess what Paul is doing is taking the basis of Buddy Velastro / Cake Boss and just making this whole physically impossible, just wild, bizarre character out of him. Sort of the same with Andrew Lloyd Webber, although I think the Andrew Lloyd Webber character is a little more down to earth. He doesn't have any mystical powers. He was never bitten by a cake scarab or a cake bug to get the second sight, as it were. His ball droid cake never came to life. You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. That's good to know, because I felt confused by it, where I was like, okay, so it's a fictionalized version of, but it's still a fictionalized version of a real person. Because yeah. I think I thought that it was like, I don't know what I thought. I was just really confused. Also, I was listening to a recent Comedy Bang Bang podcast episode mm-hmm. with Lauren Lapp. Well, it said like, because it says the names of the people, but not all of those people are themselves,
right.
Which I find confusing.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
So it was like David Spade and Lauren Lapkus ostensibly talking about their movie, The Wrong Missy, right. Which she is so good in. And like,
man, she is one of America's treasures.
Her performance in that movie is like, it is like groundbreaking and so good. And all of the like man comedy stuff with the men is just ugh. But as soon as she's there, it's like,
you know, I still haven't seen the movie, and she's the only reason I would actually willingly sit down to watch that. Like, I don't dislike David Spade. I thought he was great on the Netflix series Love with Gillian Jacobs and Paul Rust. But generally speaking, I don't like his comedy. But
yeah, I'm a fan of The Emperor's New Groove.
I think of the three Adam Sandler, you know, regulars, he's the best of the three.
Yeah. Who are the three?
Well, Adam Sandler, Paul Schneider, making copies, and David Spade.
Is Paul Schneider
the anti-vaxxer?
Bigelow, American Gigolo?
Yes, okay. he's atrocious.
Yeah, he's in that movie. The thing is her performance is so good, I might watch that movie again. Like, I want to watch it again because it's just like a revelation, but then there's all this other stuff that I don't like.
Yeah.
And all this like,
well, I just think it's
dude comedy.
I just think it's really cool that someone from the, you know, Upright Citizens Brigade / Comedy Bang Bang, sort of, I don't want to say alt comedy, but like that sort of improv-y, I guess, for lack of a better term, alt comedy scene, was able to make it big by jumping into this big name, you know, Adam Sandler sort of universe. Which it's definitely not my cup of tea, but it's pretty cool when people from the more interesting comedy world can jump into that.
Yeah, and like hopefully it's a platform for her to do more stuff. Because it was truly like this person needs to be in everything and be the big name.
Oh, 100%.
So I was listening episode. Well, no worries. I just, before I forget where I was going with it. So she is playing this character on it. I think there might be something wrong with me, but I was 40 minutes into this podcast before I realized that the character was Lauren Lapkus.
Oh, she's pretty good.
And I, partially because of the voice, like, so she's, I've seen I'm desperately want to see this character, like, with the visuals. I've seen a picture, but she's like a carpet salesman, but she has this voice that is like husky and it sounds so unlike Lauren Lapkus.
Are you talking about Big Sue?
Yes.
Yes.
And what is the name of her carpet store?
Oh crap, I don't recall at the moment.
It's like rugs and carpets downstairs.
Yes. I think it might be down there.
Yeah. I don't know why. Go on.
in the CBB canon, in I think last year's Christmas episode, there's a revelation about Big Sue and Santa Claus, So if you haven't listened to last year's Christmas special, which I definitely recommend you do, because those are just absolute silliness, you should definitely check that out for a huge revelation about the Big Sue character.
Oh my goodness.
No spoilies.
I can't even. I'm on the Comedy Bang Bang wiki right now to try to find the name of her store, but there's a lot to comb through.
Oh, she's done so many characters. Like, you know, yeah. Her and PFT and Andy Daly are probably the top three as far as character work.
So the name of the store is Carpets Rugs Down There. You heard it here. How much of the show did you watch before you discovered that it was a podcast?
Well, I didn't really have access to the show on a regular basis. I was, you know, I think at that time, yeah, I was definitely living on my own. Didn't have cable because it was a needless expense. So I would just come across clips on YouTube and whatnot. So I don't remember when I first came across like full episodes. It might have been on what Much Music became, I believe, channel 50 at that point.
Much Music not around anymore.
Well, Much Music is just Much, and they don't do Much Music.
They still do video on trial. Isn't that wild?
That is wild. One time I was on Ed the Sucks, Ed's Big Wham Bam or whatever, and cussed out a video. It was pretty neat for my 16th birthday.
Wait, what?
That's a difference.
I don't know. Okay, no. I need more information. I know Ed the Sock.
Yeah.
I don't know. The rest of that was words I didn't understand.
Okay, so back in the day when Much Music was still a thing, and before Ed the Sock was just a conservative hack on Twitter, he had this show on Much Music called Ed's Big Wham Bam, or maybe it was just a segment during the video flow. And yeah, they would just...
And Ed the Sock... he's like a gray sock with green hair and a cigar.
Yes.
And angry eyes, for those who aren't Canadian.
Yeah, seriously, no one outside of Canada knows what the fuck we're talking about here.
I keep seeing like a stencil graffiti all around Glasgow that looks like a sock.
Oh my God.
I'll show you the picture.
Yeah, you have to send me that picture. But yeah, in the early 2000s, late 90s, he had this segment where they would just get a bunch of random people off the street, off of Queen Street West in Toronto, to come be on camera, and they'd show a popular music video. And I think they had people vote on whether it was good or bad. I'm sure it was much more snappy than that, but whether they thought it sucked or didn't or whatever. And I just happened to be walking by with some people on my 16th birthday and got pulled in and... met Ed the Sock and shat on a pretty crappy video I don't remember.
Yeah, I was gonna say, if you remembered what video it was.
Well, my memory's not that good. It was, you know, pretty forgettable, you know, 2001 era, 2001 era something, mainstream hip hop or something.
Yeah. So could you see the guy attached to the sock?
Yeah, he was just like this shrimpy, middle-aged, greasy dude. He looked like someone that should not be around most people. And he was friendly enough, you know, when the cameras were on, he put the voice on and it was weird.
That's really exciting though.
Yeah.
I always feel proud of myself for remembering when George Strombolopoulos was on.
Yes, he was a gem. Still is, but he was one of the shining bright stars of Much Music at the time.
Now he's like a legitimate Canadian CBC.
Yeah. Yeah. And Sukhyun Lee is an indie filmmaker.
Was she a VJ?
Yeah. Yeah, she was a VJ on the regular programming for, I don't remember how long, but a good period. But then she got that show, The Wedge, with all like the indie weirdo sort of music, which was definitely up her alley for sure.
Yeah, I just know, like what I know about her early career is that she was in like John Cameron Mitchell movies, which is so wild when I was just sort of learning about her and like, because I only learned who she was in high school with definitely not the opera.
Oh, yeah,
show.
Yeah.
And then I was like, hold on, she's in the band in Hedwig and the Angry Inch. And then she was in that movie Short Bus, which is the movie that has a lot of real sex.
Yeah, I think, didn't she make that movie? Like, wasn't she a director on that? Or was she just in it? I don't recall.
I feel like John Cameron Mitchell directed it, but maybe she, I don't know. And there was supposedly a big hubbub because she was in it, like, while she was working at the CBC or something.
Oh, probably. Yeah, Canadians are very uptight.
They don't like naked.
No. No, it's because we're all in igloos and parkas and stuff. So, you know, if we get naked, we freeze.
It is a little cold to be naked. Although, if I believe what my mom told me when I was a kid, igloos get hot enough that you have to get naked when you're in the igloo.
See, I've never been in one, so I'll take that as gospel truth.
If anyone knows, please write in.
Anyway. Comedy Bang Bang.
Yeah, the TV show. So did you get sucked into that world pretty deep and just start eating up all the podcasts?
Well, I actually, I didn't really realize that it was a podcast first, or that the podcast really even existed, because I just didn't listen to podcasts at the time. But yeah, when I found out that, I think it was when the TV show was on Netflix, my partner and I were just nerding out online, and we're like, oh, what? It's a podcast too. And that's when we just both jumped right in.
It's always nice to get deeply, deeply immersed in something.
Yeah.
I really wish that the show would be on Netflix again.
Yeah, soon. Seriously. Same as Kids in the Hall, for God's sake.
Yeah, I've considered getting a VPN just so I can access CBC Gem, because they have all of the Kids in the Hall and all of that stuff just for free.
Duly noted.
Yeah, you should know this.
I should know this.
I think they have it all.
They must.
And also, if anyone listening has connections, I also deeply need to get in touch with Kids in the Hall to see if they can give me a version of the song Roses by the character Tammy without the audience laugh track. I need it for really important reasons.
Well, this is where you go on Twitter and just Twitter bomb all five of them.
I have. I've done it.
Excellent.
nothing happened. I was even on one of their shows and nothing.
Wait, were you?
Granted, I...
Were you on Young Drunk Punk?
I was. So the director of the episode came through my till when I was at the grocery store, and I somehow finagled it. So through the conversation, because I was a great cashier, I was great at talking to people. And he was like, oh yeah, do you want to be on it? Here's an email. So then I showed up, and I felt very because all these people, I don't know, I guess I find it hard to go through things like that through the traditional ways. I don't know. It always seems to not work out smoothly.
Like Fargo, for instance. So there's all these...
Yeah, oh God. Rude. How dare they not choose us out of the 6,000 people right. that they took a photo of? I was so charming to those women who took my photograph. Yeah, and then I just showed up, and then it turned out, so we had to be in a line buying tickets for the Clash. They also liked the makeup they did on me, because I mentioned Susie Sue in the makeup chair, so she did that on me without me knowing, and it was really
sweet.
Great. Yeah, I don't know if the director said specifically to pick me out, but I think he did, because it seemed like a guy was going through the line looking for me, because he was purple. They'd put a blue purple streak in my hair.
Okay.
And then so they're like, yeah, you're gonna walk beside this other person who has a line. I was like, oh, what a treat. And then it turned out it was somebody that I went to high school with.
Whoa.
And I was like, oh hey. Oh hey, Jill.
Small world.
Yeah.
Anyways, I dove into the podcast immediately, right into the deep end, and got immersed into the crazy universe that is Comedy Bang Bang. And so discovered what are, now legendary characters like Andrew Lloyd Webber, Dalton Wilcox, the Poet Laureate of the West, all of James Adomian's characters, who are all actually based on real people, like Jesse Ventura. I guess he did his Bernie Sanders on there as well. I'm blanking right now, but James Adomian is another fantastic comedian I discovered through the Comedy Bang Bang universe. And he's definitely one of the most talented voice actors or impressionists in the comedy world, which is good because most impressionists are kind of hacky, but he is really good.
Yeah.
At that,
his name sounds familiar, but I don't think I know really anything about him.
He's a gay stand-up comedian from LA. I think he's part Armenian or whatever. And he's super, super political, and he's always really good. His stand-up is really good at alienating straight audiences about halfway through his set, which is pretty fucking rad. like his stand-up comedy is good, but his voice work is just fantastic. And of course, I'm blanking on all of the voices he's done on both the podcast and whatnot. His Paul Giamatti is legendary because it's the saddest. He turns Paul Giamatti into the saddest, most just pathetic creature you can think of. And for the longest time, I didn't know how spot on his voice was until I saw the most recent season of Big Mouth, and Paul Giamatti, the real Paul Giamatti, has a voice as a literal piece of shit. And and I was like, oh my God, James Adomian does the most spot on Paul Giamatti yelling ever. He is so good.
Yeah, can I just say, I was just talking about that episode to somebody earlier today, the Poop Madness episode of the last season of Big Mouth. I don't know if traumatized is an unsensitive word to use, but it definitely left a mark.
A skid mark? Sure. Are we doing free association here? I'm getting into the Scott Aukerman headspace here anyway.
Get into it. It's left a mark. Do you remember there was a movie with Frankie Muniz and a zebra called Racing Stripes?
No, I do not.
What a time where you could make a fun equine racing movie with the title that's a poop joke. Also, the knowledge that Paul Giamatti is the voice of the piece of shit is that's quite something.
Yeah, fantastic. And if you listen to James Adomian's Paul Giamatti, you'll be able to tell it's just so spot on.
I definitely have to now. Paul Giamatti takes up a space in my brain that I never quite know what that space is. I think his biggest imprint on me is the movie Big Fat Liar, because we had the VHS.
Okay.
As a child? Yes. Have you seen this film?
No.
It's also a Frankie Muniz movie.
Weird.
The connection. So it's Amanda Bynes, Frankie Muniz. Paul Giamatti is like an asshole big shot screenwriter. No, producer. And it is one of the most repulsive, chaotic performances I've ever seen. It's almost like, as an adult, it's hard to watch. And yet, you love to see it. But you also hate it. One day, for some reason, he's rolling through Frankie Muniz's neighborhood. Frankie Muniz is a compulsive liar. He lies all the time. And I think he had a paper or like a short story to turn in for English class. And he's like running to school on his skateboard. And then somehow, Paul Giamatti's limo hits Frankie Muniz. And then they feel bad, so to avoid a lawsuit, he is like, we'll drive you to school. And Frankie Muniz leaves his short story in the limo.
Okay.
And Paul Giamatti takes it and starts developing a movie out of it, saying it's his idea. So Amanda Bynes and Frankie Muniz go to Hollywood, and they stay in this big prop warehouse, this big magical prop and costume warehouse while they're there.
Oh.
And basically find justice, seek revenge, and wreak general havoc on Paul Giamatti. They dye him blue. They put blue dye in his pool at one point. Let me tell you, it's a
trip. This is a trip.
I just love it. I love it so much. Out of all of the unhinged Giamatti performances, I mean, I haven't seen everything he's been in, but I would be willing to bet that it's the most unhinged.
Oh, wow. That's a statement.
Yeah, it is. Please write in if you agree, listener. I feel guilty for I tend not to listen to that podcast because of the characters. I think maybe it's like, I'm such an audio person, but when there's a character, I really love to see the visual component of it.
And I think maybe part of the reason why I can really get into it is because growing up, I would not only watch Fawlty Towers, but my mom also had the audio Fawlty Towers tapes, which was just the episodes, without the visuals. It was just the sound track or whatever, like the dialogue and whatnot. So like a radio play sort of deal.
Was it recorded specifically for that, or was it literally the TV show?
It was just straight up all the audio from each episode lifted, put onto tape, and it worked. It worked perfectly well because Fawlty Towers was a show that had like two sets in the same building.
Yeah.
So it totally worked. Like, you didn't get the physical humor so much, but if you'd seen the episodes enough, you obviously got it. But as a result, I think that led down the line to just being really able to dive right into audio sketch comedy, improv sketch comedy.
Yeah, that makes sense. Is it almost like comforting to listen to audio sketch comedy for you?
It kind of really is, yeah.
It just feels like a dog on its back having its belly rubbed.
Yes.
Maybe that's what I was gonna say. Maybe that's just my visual image to accompany that feeling.
It's a very good feeling.
Yeah, that's nice. I think I'm like getting better. If I really like know the person, I think usually once I listen to more than 3 minutes of that character, then I sort of like settle into it.
Yeah, and it definitely helps if it's the first time that character has been on. I think in recent years, Paul F. Tompkins has really started to move away from his really established characters. Like, we haven't seen Cake Boss except for in live episodes in a long time. Andrew Lloyd Webber still makes appearances, but a lot of his characters lately have been brand new ones. Like Big Chunky Bubbles was introduced just a couple of years ago.
Who's Big Chunky Bubbles?
Big Chunky Bubbles is a children's entertainer that made his debut at a CBB live show on one of their tours. And he is a children's entertainer who is just a horrible, vile person. He's just like the most embittered, has the grossest voice. He is just this miserable, miserable prick who hates Scott Aukerman so much. And so many of Paul F. Tompkins' characters hate Scott Aukerman. They are openly, openly disdainful of poor Scott, probably because he's, you know, a poor interviewer. But yeah, Big Chunky Bubbles.
just keep saying him.
He's basically like a miserable clown, but I don't think he actually wears clown makeup. But he is a miserable children's entertainer who, instead of balloon art, he creates hot bubbles out of stews, chowders, soups. His wife died in a boiling soup accident. So he's a widow.
Accident with air quotes.
I feel it was an accident, but okay. That might have led to him becoming just this miserable prick.
Was it his soup? He probably feels responsible.
Maybe. Yeah, that is possible. But yeah, so that was, I think Big Chunky Bubbles made his debut like mere minutes before, or like an hour or so before they were due to go on stage for a live show. They were at a restaurant and Paul came across this item in the menu that it was a stew and it said in the description, Big Chunky Bubbles. And either Scott or Lauren Lapkus were like, oh, you should do a character called that. And he was like, okay. And came up with a backstory, debuted it that night.
That's great. And just like, I really, once you mentioned the soup part, I was like, okay, like I really know what kind of bubbles these are. The thing about it is, I have to wonder for the dish. Like, when you're cooking a dish, when it's on the boiler, that's when you're getting the big chunky bubbles.
Yeah, so it's...
But when you serve it, surely the bubbles aren't there anymore.
Yeah, no, I unless the, I don't know, maybe this super stew restaurant had served them on hot plates or something.
A hot pot.
Yeah.
What a draw for people.
Right?
Like,
now imagine that as
not believe.
Imagine that as children's entertainment. Just instead of balloon art, you get big chunky bubbles.
And then I imagine like the bubbles, say it's like a horse, it's in the air, and then it pops and a little piece of celery falls out and you can catch it.
Oh my god. Like a pinata perhaps. A big chunky pinata.
It's just a pinata full of stew.
And I think stuff like this is sort of what really draws me towards this sort of comedy that's not the sort of bro-y, sort of same old cliche man stuff. It's just this really off the beaten path sort of, I don't know, just really fucked up imaginary situations, characters, premises that no mainstream comedian would touch.
Or just, I remember, this is maybe a little spicy. I mean, maybe I like not, spice. But, so yeah, in your big chunky bubble. So I worked for a few years at a big performance hall in Calgary, and the comedian Danny Boy came. He's Scottish, but I didn't really know who he was, but we were all like, oh, he's actually like really funny. And then, a few months later, Dane Cook came. I definitely asked to be on coat check for most of that show.
Fair.
But I did end up having to go in a few times towards the end. But I was just talking with my coworker, who was like this super arty 66-year-old woman, super cool, lived in New York in the 90s. And we were just talking about like just how we didn't like his stuff as much. Somehow like Danny Boy came up. She just said so like casually. She's like, yeah, well like Danny Boy actually has an imagination. So that's what that made me think about. I don't know if it's that people wouldn't touch something, but like
they don't have the ability to come up with a wild concept out of something fairly ordinary.
Or they're
like playing down to their audience to gain a higher following, perhaps.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just people, whoever is in your realm, in your bubble, and your brains all work the same. I mean, because I never want to be mean or derisive without a good reason, mm-hmm. especially on a podcast everyone's going to listen to, but...
Oh, don't worry, I'll take up that mantle for you.
Yeah, okay, you can do that.
I kid.
But I have to say, that's what I appreciate so much about Paul Tompkins in particular, but also like Scott Aukerman, because I've been listening to Freedom.
That's a good one, yeah.
And because which is their podcast with Lauren Lapkus, where they're all just buds hanging out. And I just really appreciate the fact that they are two white, straight, middle-aged men who are
not shitty.
Like genuinely really, yeah, and really open and really funny. And every now and then, I think Paul F. Tompkins was on Nicole Byer's podcast, Why Won't You Date Me? And there was a point at which I think Nicole Byer was talking about men spraying their genitals with perfume.
Wait, what?
You know, as you do. And she just said, like, yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I want to be able to smell your dick. And Paula Tompkins was just like, I want to smell your dick. And I was like, oh, I love you, Paul. And I just think, like, his voice singing that just plays in my head every now and then. And I'm just like, oh, Paul, you're my favorite.
Oh, he is so good.
And also, we've talked about this before, how even he's, like, evolved.
Yeah.
Through time. Like, his, I want to say 2006 album, there's definitely some stuff in there that I don't think he would say now.
Oh, 100%.
That is iffy, yeah.
And even Comedy Bang Bang as a show has evolved too. I mean, we're going towards its 12th year now. And obviously the comedy world has evolved a lot in that period of time, but also Scott's sensibility has evolved. There's things that he said back in 2009 that he definitely would not be saying now. And some of the guests that have been on the show or some of the characters that have been on the show in the past would not happen now. Whenever a big comedian who was previously a guest on Bang Bang has been canceled for being shitty, they just never appear again. It's never spoken, really. Sometimes it is spoken of, but they just don't appear again. For someone who's, like, both of them are in their early 50s. I think Scott's 50. I think Paul's 52. They're, like...
We love this deep knowledge.
they're both, like, pretty fucking... I hate the word progressive, but I'll use it just this once.
sometimes you don't know what other word
to yeah use. Yeah, totally. Like four white cis straight comedians in that age bracket, they're not doing the thing that almost everyone else does, which is just stay the same, and not make any evolution, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, I love the openness and like willingness to grow and change, and also to like champion younger comedians.
Oh, totally.
A lot of which are women.
Yeah. And women of color specifically, or queer women, or non-binary people.
Yeah, I don't know. It gives like my heart a warm feeling. This is a kind of unrelated tangent, but.
Oh, that's rare.
Watch. For me? To watch Paul F. Tompkins' stand-up from the late 90s.
Oh, it's so weird.
You can see his, angle. You can see it, but it's somehow not situated right. It's somehow not settled. And it's such a weird thing to, put words to.
Yeah, no, I totally get it.
Over time, it just settled in. It just settled in.
I don't even... He wasn't the snappy dresser back then that he is now. He was a lot more schlubby, to use... I mean, a New Yorker term.
They still wore suits, but
they weren't quite as fantastic as they are now. Sort of.
They didn't have the zhuzh.
Sort of like early John Mulaney versus modern John Mulaney, who's the second most well-dressed comedian.
Are we saying male comedians?
Yes,
though?
Of course. Yes, because there's plenty of non-male comedians who are very, very snappy dressers as well.
Yes.
Cameron Esposito is one of the best dressed comedians as well. Yeah, who I also discovered on Comedy Bang Bang, along with Rhea Butcher.
Did you discover them playing characters?
They themselves? Never actually played characters.
Sense.
Cameron Esposito, I don't remember the first episode I heard. It was probably with Paul F. because he's on essentially every episode and every podcast. But yeah, Cameron Esposito I discovered on Bang Bang just randomly. I think she was promoting her second album. And she became the ward of one of Paul F. Tompkins' characters. So she didn't play a character per se, but she worked herself into a character that someone else was playing.
Yeah.
So she was, even though she's not an improv comedian, she was able to really work within that universe, which not a lot of people can do.
Well, she also has an improv background. I've recently listened to her book.
Oh, I still have to check that out.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, you can also read it with your eyeballs.
Who needs to do that?
She got hired, I think, in Chicago or something. Got hired. She auditioned for this established improv team or whatever.
Okay.
Full of seasoned people. And they hired her as part of the main cast right away. And then after a year, they were like, you should leave.
Oh, ouch.
I think just because she knew that she couldn't
keep up.
So she does have that background. But it is interesting. It makes me feel a little bit mentally dislodged, but it's interesting how on the Comedy Bang Bang they have the guest who is just there to be themselves as the guest, Scott, and then the person playing the character and all interacting.
Yeah, it's that goddamned open door policy. Scott just doesn't know how to lock that door.
When I was listening to the Lauren Lapkus one where I didn't know it was her, I really should have figured it out. It's embarrassing. But she kept saying things as David Spade was talking about making the movie. I was like, why didn't they have Lauren Lapkus on? Why isn't she here to talk about also making the movie? She's the star. David Spade would say something I tried to give Lauren space to I don't know, do something. Then her as Big Sue would be like, oh, I read that you were very healthy. So I want to talk about the TV show. I feel like you can maybe sense why. But so on the
Are
TV
you
show,
season five?
You have, I think so, because on there is the band leader, but it's just one person on the show. Who the first one was Reggie Watts. God bless him. He laughed at my pizza scan. And the second one, of course, was Weird Al.
Oh no, the third one was Weird Al.
Was the third one? Oh, I'm so, well. I haven't watched it.
That's,
sorry,
that's
I'm
okay.
Sorry.
That's okay. I was supposed
to be a big drop, and I did it wrong.
No. So halfway through season four, Reggie got called up to the big leagues, the James Corden show, to be the band leader there. And so Scott got Kid Cudi, to be the band leader for the rest of that season. And I think there was probably some pushback by, you know, diehard fans or whatever. I don't like to do that. And I thought Kid Cudi was fine. I don't know if he necessarily he was able to work within the parameters of the show pretty well. Like, I have nothing bad to say about those episodes.
Yeah, I've seen a clip of him talking on the coach, and he seems
He was a guest early on in that season, and they got him to be the band leader for the rest of that season, but then he, you know, is a pretty well sought after musician, producer, etc. So he left. And that is when our good friend Weird Alistair Yankovic got on board for season 5.
So I won't lie, that's the main reason that I want access to the show.
Yeah, Weird Al really displayed his acting chops over the course of those 20 episodes.
Just what a to have someone of his caliber.
Oh yeah.
On this tiny show. Well,
Weird Al has been a guest on the podcast since day one, but definitely since Comedy Bang Bang was Comedy Death Ray. So since the first year, since they were on terrestrial radio.
It's weird because Weird Al is like niche, but he's also huge.
Yeah, he's a huge celebrity. Not. But yeah, it's if I hadn't have picked Comedy Bang Bang for my topic, I definitely could have picked Weird Al Yankovic.
I won't lie. I had a hope.
I'm sorry to dash your hopes upon the rocks. Like so many ships.
It's okay because you picked a topic that I could forcefully weave Weird Al into.
Of course.
I love that the stuff that he's involved with is all like kind of alternative.
Yeah. And that's like not a super recent development, but a fairly recent development. I think pretty much as soon as he lost his glasses is when he kind of got on board the alternative comedy bandwagon. Like, I've seen him in Tim and Eric, for God's sakes, which
I was just about to say
you
that.
Wouldn't think would really be in his wheelhouse. Because, you know, he's a fairly clean comedian and, you know, he's just a kind of a family man sort of deal.
But he also has, as he said this himself, he has a really sort of sick thread of comedy.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can definitely tell from some of the more violent lyrics in some of his originals.
Like his Santa song, which he says originally ended with Santa being shot in the head.
Yeah. Have you heard the original version?
I think I have.
Yeah, it's pretty bloody.
Yeah.
Somehow more
and
so.
And then
yeah.
Like Beazle Stomping Day, of course, which I saw him do live with a full orchestra.
Lucky.
One of the best moments of my life.
Isn't that when you fell in love with him?
It was! Should I get into this?
Yeah. We've gone on so many tangents. This is remotely attached to the topic.
So it was August 2019. I was getting ready to move across the world to Scotland. So many things were up in the air. You know, I was on the precipice of so much. And then one of my last shifts that I worked before I moved was 2 Weird Al shows in one day.
Oh my God. I'm so jealous.
Of him play. Yeah, I got to go to church twice that day. of him playing with the Calgary Philharmonic Orchestra. And I had like a lot of goodwill for Weird Al, but I definitely wasn't super enmeshed.
You weren't a full Owlhead yet.
No, and I also think I thought like, because my little brother liked him and like had like mentioned some things and showed them to me, and I think I sort of like had this thing in my head of, oh yeah, it's pretty like rudimentary stuff, whatever. Which now I'm like, oh, that's snobbery, because then like. So as it starts, one of the most amazing audiences to view, because it's like families and kids. Like one family all had matching Hawaiian shirts.
My God.
Yeah, families and kids, punks.
Yeah.
one person who turned out my manager knew, who had like, you know, like horn implants in his head and like eyes tattooed all blue. and then I can't remember who the third demographic was.
Probably just like weird niche comedy nerds and hipsters and stuff.
Yeah. It was just a treat seeing people with their specific costumes. And then afterwards, because at this point, I didn't know that Hawaiian shirts was a Weird Al thing.
Okay.
I didn't even, this is embarrassing, but I didn't know that his look used to be a mustache and glasses.
Oh, you're so young.
I know. I think I told you that. And you were like,
I think I said that exact thing.
You sweet summer child. But I was still super excited. But like, also like, there was a veneer of embarrassment of how excited I was a little bit. And then the show starts and like something begins to happen to me. And it's like the breaking down of walls and opening up to pure joy.
Yes.
Just the purest joy. So this is what happens when I listen to his stuff. Some of it's not the most like nuanced comedy, but you just listen to it and then you just laugh. You're just like, it, I think it truly like breaks down your snobbery and your like cynical cool kid walls. I think sometimes you're just like,
yeah.
And just,
yeah. I've never known anyone to grow out of him.
I feel like there's people who are like, oh yeah, I used to like him when I was 12, but they don't not like him now.
Yeah.
He is one of the best performers I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Like, can you believe he's over 60?
Yeah.
It's wild.
I didn't know that he's just naturally super bendy. So in the show, when he does a 180 degree kick, meaning that one of his legs is, oh no, what's on the clock? What's the bottom one? Is it 3 o'clock? 6 o'clock? One of his legs is 12 o'clock. And one of his legs is the other. It's straight. It's 180.
Yeah. It's wild.
Now I need to know what the bottom number is on the clock.
6 o'clock.
It is 6 o'clock. Okay, yes. One leg is 6, one leg is 12. And it's just like, this man has to do yoga.
Oh, 100%.
But then later learning that he's just naturally bendy.
Like, yeah, it's so wild that he'll just like randomly, just casually put his leg behind his head and hop around on one leg. And yeah.
And that's what makes him so weird. He puts 2,000% when he's performing. And something that really stands out for me from that show is like where he does tacky and he comes into the audience. Obviously, he's done it 100 times, but the level of confidence, you know, he's 100% on top of it. And the first show, there was like a whole bunch of empty seats. So he was doing this thing where he like steps up onto one of the seats, unfolds it, and is sort of like crouching over a seat in somebody's space who's sitting behind that
God.
Seat, walking on top of these seats. And it's just, this is a rock solid performer. Oh, that's the day I came alive.
I love it.
So, dear listeners, that's my Weird Al origin story. I celebrated my first anniversary this past August. So then learning that he was on Comedy Bang Bang, now I'm like,
It was the absolute perfect combination. And yeah, it was really neat to discover that, oh, he's good at sketch comedy too, and not just music and live performance and weird interviews. Yeah, no, he's just a fantastic performer in every realm.
And is just willing to collaborate.
Totally.
Like, just get on board. Everybody should go look at the Tim and Eric one he's in, because it is one of the most unhinged things I've seen. But that's only because I haven't seen all of Tim and Eric. I've just seen it. So I'm sure if I'd seen the rest of it, that's nothing.
Oh, yeah. But with, I mean, just the, maybe one of the most unhinged Weird Al related things. To this day, I'm just so amazed that he was able to cross over from like mainstream family comedy music to just weird, like beyond alternative comedy and super niche hipster comedy, like Comedy Bang Bang. I hate to use that term, but I did. And yeah, just like the podcast comedy world in general, and just really off the beaten path stuff you wouldn't expect a big family comedian entertainer to do. Like, yeah, it's really neat.
I mean, I would say, I think that he's sort of been involved in the world for a long time, but I think the alternative comedy zone didn't have as much, people just didn't know, because like he has been friends with like Judy Tenuta. She was in his show and like seems like they've been friends for a long time. Watching her stuff has been interesting, where she was a kind of filthy, but also just so not what you would expect for Weird Al to do it, where like she's like an insult comic.
Yeah.
So I feel like he's sort of always been involved in that world, but what he puts out in his specific work is just not that.
Yeah.
Weird Alan
I called him Weird Alistair because Lord Andrew Lloyd Webber refers to him as that on Weird Alistair because, you know, that's how English people talk.
I mean, I can confirm.
That's right.
Having interacted with quite a few in the recent year and a half. How long have I lived here? Yeah.
Well, if you want a really good audio tour of, I believe, Edinburgh, you should listen to, I forget Andy Daly's character, but he plays a Scottish tour guide, a ghost tour of, I believe, Edinburgh. And it gets dark because all of Andy Daly's characters are, I'm trying to think of the right term, well, basically monsters. And it's a real treat.
Is it in some ways like a legitimate tour through Edinburgh backed up with facts?
Well, he had just done, like Andy Daly, the actor comedian, I think he was at the Edinburgh Comedy Fest or whatever it's called, Fringe Fest, yeah. And he had just come back to LA from that and was on Bang Bang like a week after returning. So he had the Scottish character that he developed. And so I don't know how accurate of a tour it is, like, say, with street names or anything like that. But I will say that when I saw Bang Bang live last October, Andy Daly's character definitely was good at referencing local Vancouver streets and whatnot. So
I like that, putting in the effort.
Yeah. And instead of just the cursory, what's up, Vancouver, or anything, you know, silly like that, like just peppering in local stuff is really neat.
Yeah, that is neat. I'm very excited to listen to the Edinburgh window.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know a lot about Edinburgh yet, though. And like, I've only been there a handful of times and haven't really properly explored.
Well, then maybe this ghost tour is for you.
Maybe it is for me.
There's one point where they light horses on fire. There's some ritualistic murders. Andy Daly's characters are usually pretty fucked up.
Do they go to the castle?
Oh, I believe there's a castle involved for sure. Yeah.
Is it a comedy Bang Bang episode? It is.
You can definitely look it up on the Comedy Bang Bang wiki. At least look up Andy Daly and the most Scottish sounding name on his characters list, that will be the
Okay, sweet. So not only I will look that up, but now listeners can fact chat. Maybe Scottish listeners can fact check it too. And maybe be offended by American doing a Scottish character. Who knows?
I'm not going to lie. His accent work is pretty good.
Alrighty. Well, do you have anything you absolutely need to say that you haven't said yet about Comedy Bang Bang?
Oh my God, probably, but I can't think of it at the moment. I did the thing where I drank coffee, so all my thoughts are extremely scattered. So I'm probably not doing remote justice to this thing. I'm this niche topic that I super care about. But no, off the top of my head, aside from, I guess, one of my most valued experiences in my long life is I got to see a Comedy Bang Bang live for the first time ever last October, and it was just mind-blowingly amazing. You ever have one of those things where you laugh and your chest hurts and your face hurts for days afterwards? No exaggeration.
Yeah, and you're like, you can't stop laughing, and you're like, this is unpleasant.
Yeah, yeah. So that was the Comedy Bang Bang live show. And that was the last meaningful time that I was in Vancouver before the pandemic hit. And yeah, it featured Paul F. Tompkins, Lauren Lapkus, Andy Daly, and Carl Tart, who is part of the newer generation of Bang Bang guests.
But my God, you got the all-star cast.
Oh, it was good.
What was Paul wearing?
Paul was wearing his standard suit, you know, a blue suit. He and Lauren were playing, Chasmin and Sunny, who are, I believe, radio DJs. I'm not super, super up on their backstory. I've only heard like one or two episodes with them. I believe talk radio perhaps, anyway, or newscasters. I don't remember.
NPR?
Something like that, but a little more mainstreamy. So it was them And Carl Tart played O.J. Simpson. And his O.J. Simpson is, oh, I mean, I've never heard, I haven't heard O.J. Simpson speak since the trial, so it's been a minute. But just the, he based his character off of O.J. Simpson's tweets, because I guess that summer O.J. Simpson had finally got on Twitter. And he signs off every tweet with some just weird sort of, ha ha ha, good talking to you, so that sort of thing. And so he would work that in to his character. And the joke is Scott has no idea about anything that happened in O.J. Simpson's life after 1993. So they dance around that subject just beautifully, and you would think it's super problematic, and it, but it's only partly problematic. But it's like really, really ingenious what Carl Tart did with the O.J. Simpson character. And of course, Andy Daly played Dalton Wilcox, poet laureate of the West, which is, I guess, like, his sort of flagship character.
Western USA or just general?
The Old West. Okay. You know, cowboy laureate, cowboy poet.
It sounds so great to be able to watch them do it. I imagine you can see them like corpsing and stuff, even though they're professionals and maybe they don't do that. Although Paul will laugh at anything. Oh,
his laugh is so pure. Whenever he's so on pure. Any podcast, and even if the it's mic so is like pure. Like feet away from his face, his laugh just carries over, and oh, it's beautiful.
I like when you can hear him wheezing.
Yes.
That's like the special. Yeah, he's so generous with his laughter.
Oh,
too.
Totally.
Like, there's this thing where like comedians don't laugh at other comedians, but he is so generous. Sometimes a thing will be he'll make a thing funnier than it is because he has a big Paul belly laugh.
Yes, that's something that's really cool about the Bang Bang universe as well, is that the comedians are all really supportive of each other. It just feels like a bunch of friends getting together, having a good time for an hour or two a week. And yeah, it doesn't matter even really the background of the comedian. It could be someone brand new. It could be an old favorite or whatever, an old, a veteran of the scene, for lack of a better term. Everyone just genuinely has a good time. Even Jason Mantzoukas, who when he's on Bang Bang is like super, you know, taking the piss out of Scott left, right, and center. He's clearly enjoying himself. Otherwise, he wouldn't be on the show so much. Or Ben Schwartz just has the best time. Even people who are more monotone, like Tig Notaro or Rhea Butcher, they're both clearly having a fantastic time. Just everyone.
Yeah, it just feels nice and positive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do have to just take this moment to announce to anyone who may be listening, speaking of Jason Mantzoukas, in the last 3 days, I can confirm that I have officially developed a crush on him.
I mean, how can you not? that wild beast.
Yeah. Well, he was on the podcast Thirst Aid Kit, which is basically what it sounds like. They did an episode on him, which I haven't listened to yet, but I did listen to the episode where he actually came on, and it was very funny. But he was also talking about how every time he sees somebody talking about how he's hot, it's always like, so I don't know if I've been concussed or something. I think there might be something deeply wrong with me, but I think Jason Mantzoukas is attractive. And how that's like, it seems to have affected his psyche.
Hainong, man.
Oh, yeah, he was there for Hainong Man.
Hainong Man is Mantzoukas.
The Hainong Man is something. Is there even a way to give context for Hainong Man?
Surprisingly, there is.
Okay, go.
So on an episode, Scott was, you know, okay, so Jason was one of, like, the main guest, the co-host, if you will. And they were having their usual banter where they just say, you know, they have just their weird fucked up conversation between the two of them, and Scott said something probably insulting to Jason.
Okay, yes.
And
okay, I'll back up. I'll back up.
And Jason meant he was trying to say "hang on, man," as in,
oh, I thought it was "hey now, man."
No, it was supposed to be "hang on, man," and it came out as "hey nong, man." And then the fans of the show just went wild. This would have been 2015 or something like that. So Jason became the Hainong man himself. And
the Hainong man.
And now people, when they see him out in the wild, they'll scream Hainong man at him. That, or they'll scream Geostorm for fans of the How Did This Get Made podcast. And yeah, then that became a thing. And it's even referenced in the TV show in season 5 towards the end of the run.
Just the simple pleasure of a Hainong man.
I mean, I use that as like my username for all sorts of things now. So
like if you go bowling, that's Hainong man.
Yeah.
I think Hainong man is the first Comedy Bang Bang thing I ever, because I think I saw you posting about it.
Oh, most likely. I'm a fucking nerd.
And I Googled it and I was like, this is incredibly funny.
Yes.
And hadn't listened to any other Comedy Bang Bang inalia at all.
Yeah, it's a hell of a thing to have your first CBB sort of moment be a Hainong man, but it's they often use it as a reset when they're going a little too far in one direction. One of them will say Hainong man, and then it'll reset.
I think it's a good way to introduce someone into the world.
Absolutely.
It doesn't feel too esoteric. It's just silly.
Yeah.
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 So I think we're coming up in the end.
All right.
But I have a question for you, who our last guest asked.
Okay. Okay.
What is a song you are embarrassed to love?
That is a tough one because I've stopped being embarrassed by music. But I have recently, in the last 5 to 10 years, really embraced a lot of top 40 pop music. And I guess the other day at work, Wrecking Ball by Miley Cyrus came on and I got unbelievably happy.
It's a great song.
It really is. And I mean, yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of problematic aspects to Miley Cyrus, just like with any rich white girl, but or rich white person in general, but
Or white person in general.
Yeah, but it seems the richer, the worse, if you want to get all class worry about it. But yeah, I think she has a fantastic voice, and I really dig that song.
Have you seen her doing a zombie?
Yes.
It's good.
Have you seen her doing Jolene?
I have.
What a voice.
And I think, like, specifically with, because she has a very specific voice, but I think with Zombie, it's like, oh, this is where her voice is best suited.
100%.
Yeah. I have one.
Okay.
And I am genuinely embarrassed to like it. And that is Lick It Up by Kiss.
I don't even know how that one goes because Kiss is just so far out of my universe.
Yeah. Well, so here's how this happened. I was, you know, on YouTube perusing the music videos.
Of course, because Much Music doesn't exist anymore.
Yes, and I saw a thumbnail for this in which the thumbnail for this video, I don't know, what's his name? Gene Simmons.
Oh yeah, the one with the tongue.
Yes, looks just indescribable. I guess this was the first video where they didn't have their makeup on.
Okay, right.
And they're all in a row, and he looks
gross,
like a cliche. Well, he looks like the rest of them are like, I don't know, kind of like hair rock glam, and he looks like a caveman on a mission to kill somebody.
Oh my god. And this is supposed to be a sexy song.
Yeah, and like it's a treat. And so I was watching it just being like, oh haha, partially ironic, and then it was like, actually this is kind of a great song. and I feel, because it's also, they're just also so gross, like misogyny is so baked into their
thing.
So that's why I'm embarrassed to like it, but it's kind of a jam.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I haven't heard really much Kiss outside of their hits on the radio because I just genuinely don't like them as a band or as people for that matter, particularly Gene Simmons, who it turns out is like very conservative types.
Yeah, I have never been into them, but I do enjoy like their visuals, and I enjoy when people dress up as Kiss in costumes, because it's a way for straight men to get all glam.
Yeah,
it's like a loophole.
Sort of like glam rock in general.
Yeah, but even like I would feel like glam rock the genre is significantly, is more queer.
Yeah, oh, 100%. And it's significantly better than Kiss.
Like, somebody's dad will just buy platform boots and like silver spandex. And you know, I support that.
I'm all about that. For a band that I really, really do not like at all, they have inadvertently inspired a whole bunch of bands and musicians and artists that I truly do enjoy. Not maybe not musically, but just being like the one accessible weirdo band in some small town in Ohio.
Yeah. Well, Damien, do you have any social media or things that you want people to know about?
So one of my hobbies, aside from listening to esoteric comedy podcasts, is I take photos, primarily of live music, primarily of the punk rock variety. So I have an Instagram dedicated to that at Doom Society Shots. As I said at the top of the show, I'm a very lazy podcaster, but I do have a podcast called Night of the Livid Punks, where I just chat with my friends about punk rock and the DIY scene and stuff like that, politics and whatnot, which you can find on all podcast platforms, Night of the Livid Punks. And unfortunately, that's kind of all I have really going on this year, aside from working too much and wearing a face mask.
Are you still butchering vegetables?
Oh, yes, I'm butchering beans at the Very Good Butchers, which is a plant-based meat alternative company here in Victoria, BC. And we're doing some pretty neat stuff in the next year that I can't talk about.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Gooey plant.
Ooh, yeah. We're getting busy.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for joining me. This was a treat.
Well, thank you so much for the invite.
Alrighty, guys. Bye.
Thank you, as always, to Sappho for providing the absolutely scintillating theme music you're hearing right now. You can listen to her album Time Machine on Spotify by searching Sappho Time Machine or clicking the link in the episode description.